There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
1207 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. By the way, bringing things around full circle, of course, in the show open, what's wrong with the beer we got? It drank pretty good, don't it? Now on a T-shirt. So if you didn't catch that on Friday when the folks from the Nutria Rodeo Trading Company were in here, they make T-shirts, hats, stickers, all kind of cool local stuff with a local vibe. They've got a T-shirt tipping the hat to part of the Midday Mobile show intro, and you can check it out, NutriaRodeo.com, or see them on social media. That T-shirt, along with a lot of other cool local T-shirts up there, but it's like, I think this is part of what is the show intro for Midday Mobile has now made it onto a T-shirt. Pretty proud of that. Good-looking shirts as well. Nutria Rodeo Trading Company. Check them out there. All right, 12:08 coming up on the show today. Todd Stacey is going to join us in hour number two with Alabama Daily News. The latest here on the movement with the Alabama Republican Party and seeing if they can get a seat at the convention, that and a whole lot more state news coming up with him. Plus, speaking of state news, state senator throwing his hat in the ring for Supreme Court Justice Cam Ward's going to join us in just about 7 minutes. I do want to go live to our news partners, WKRG and Debbie Williams, to talk more about a story I have no words for it. Debbie, that's why I called you up.
It's very disturbing. The more problematic thing about this is that this guy fell through the cracks. So we're talking about Bobby Ricky Bible. He was supposed to be a registered sex offender out of Georgia that was living in Alabama off County Road 65. 57 years old. Back in the early 90s, he was arrested for child molestation charges around the LaGrange, Georgia area. Authorities say that he was bouncing back and forth between Georgia and Alabama, and somewhere along the line, he started not registering when he would move from one to the other. Back in the early 90s, if you moved as a registered sex offender, once you were verified, or if you moved to another state, then you were taken off a registry in the previous state, if you're following me.
Right.
So he's registered in Alabama. He moves to Georgia. They take him off the registry in Alabama. They don't do that anymore, but that's how he fell through the cracks.
What?
He was living in an RV park. A young girl, a student at Somerdale Elementary, had some sort of interaction with him and reported it to her school resource officer. That started an investigation, and when investigators went up on his property Friday or last Thursday, he was actually packing to leave, and they said, wait a minute, and arrested him for an investigation. He faces several charges now. Failing to register was the first one. Then they have since charged him with four felony counts of a felon in possession with firearms. And probably the most disturbing part of when they went into his RV and did a search warrant on Friday, last Friday, they found a sex doll that is anatomically correct and is a child. I saw it. It's probably 4 feet tall. And it's just, I have no words, like you said, Sean. It's just incredible.
If you're just joining us, talking to Debbie Williams, WKRG, talk about this story from Baldwin County. Now, I got a couple of questions maybe you can answer. Is the fact that he was living, now I see how what you explained here, he fell between the cracks. Is there anything to living at an RV park because it's not a permanent residence that keeps people from having to, I thought that, you know, you look at the thing online, you can see the people, you know, you check your neighborhood for sex offenders and right. All that. Is the same thing true if they're at an RV park, or is there an exception? How does that work?
There's not an exception now. We're getting into this because this is what this morning, and so I saw him on the jail log last week and started doing a little investigation. But when we looked for him on the Alabama and the Georgia sex registries, there's not a peep of him on either one. And so, but you can do searches and different things and different websites to come up, and you know that. The authorities are saying he's a registered sex offender, but you can't find any official sex registry that has him listed on there. So back in the early 90s, I think it was 1993 was when he was convicted. He obviously, and we're still looking into this but to get the details, but obviously spent some time in prison. In 99, he was out and registered with the Georgia authorities. At some point, he moved to Alabama and registered here. But then, once he moved back to Georgia in 2011, there's just no record of where he's been since then. So we don't know at this point how long he's been in Foley and Summerdale and Alabama or Baldwin County. And so we're just... they've changed the way that they do it now. So they have to have some kind of verification from that state, or whenever, if he's on a registry here, once he moves and he's on a registry there, then they will send a verification. Yes, he's registered, and they have a way of keeping up with him.
Okay, so there is. So now, because that's what I was wondering. So now, when they say, okay, well, I'm moving to another state, well, the state that he moves from waits to get verification from the new state that they now know where
correct.
That person is.
Right. Exactly.
Lord knows I have so many questions. I know this is early on in this, Debbie, but also reporting here, Sheriff's Office says two juveniles were living with this Bobby Ricky Bible.
Well, I asked that they weren't actually living with him, but he had a girlfriend who did have a child. He did have access to children, I'm guessing, in that RV park. Now, I've not seen the RV park, so I'm still... we're still en route there just to see what the whole setup is, because, you know, sometimes they have those community areas where you have pools and different mm-hmm. recreational things, and maybe that's the access that they're talking about. But they certainly are concerned that he has access to children, and there could possibly be victims out there who they need to talk to.
I mean, obviously, understatement of the day. This is a disturbing
yes.
story. It is quite disturbing, and on so many levels. Obviously, people are going to focus on that doll as well. But, you know, I guess the arrest was actually, like you said, made for firearms, felon in possession of firearms, right?
Well, that was part of the charges. So after they did the search warrant on Friday, then they found the weapons. There was one pistol and three shotguns and ammunition. So both of those are violations. He was also living in a prohibited residence because he was so close to children. Failure to register, and he had a requirement to register that he failed to do, and so that's another charge. So in total, it's $80,000, and the sheriff's office made that a surety bond, so he would have to have somebody in Baldwin County come up with $80,000 to get him out of jail, and that's they tried to make it as tough as possible for him to get out.
Of course, this starts the next question. Of course, there's a lot of people out here, not just parents, everybody, but I'll say it from a parent's perspective. How many other people use that loophole? You know, how can we track
exactly.
that down?
I mean, you're talking a decade. That's the question. So we will talk with a registry compliance officer later today to find out when they change things, you know, because it's frightening to think about. And I'm not a parent, but I can understand your perspective completely. I don't have to be a parent to be afraid of that.
No, I think everybody, I think the whole community, you have this idea that there's this process, right, that helps somewhat protect
right.
children out there. And then we see something like this that, well, just, you know, with a move to a state, another state, and back to the other state, you're now off the record. Wow.
Right.
Debbie,
right.
I appreciate your update on this. I'll be watching closely for the reporting today and this evening at WKRG. Thanks for joining us on Midday Mobile.
Absolutely.
All right.
My pleasure, Sean.
Yeah, it's always great reporting from Debbie, even when it's something as scary as this. Ugh. I am going to put the story on Twitter because you need to see the story. There's so many parts of this. Obviously, there's the doll that has everybody talking, but how about the fact that, guys, registered sex offender moves to a state, moves from Georgia to Alabama, and then back to Georgia, and then by the time he comes back to Alabama, he's off the radar. Scary stuff.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you here. Text line at 343-0106. And we'll open up phone lines later on in the hour. Right now, a band you've heard on the show with us quite a few times over the years, State Senator Cam Ward joining us to talk about, we'll talk prison reform because he knows he can't come on the show without talking about that. But also, big announcement today for you. And Cam, what was the announcement?
I'm running for place one on the Alabama Supreme Court in the March 3rd Republican primary. So looking forward to it. It's been something I've been thinking about for a while, and I think I can bring a perspective coming from the legislative branch of government to the judicial branch that we haven't had, and that is, you know, the legislature should write the laws, the court should interpret, but you shouldn't write laws from the court. So that's a big issue for me and just something I feel passionate about.
You're going to be in a proceeding there with other justices and say, be careful, you're acting like legislators now.
Yeah, as someone who's served the legislative branch of government, I can see exactly where we run into so many problems. That's when the courts start making the laws themselves.
Well, let's talk about the process for running this campaign now that you've got, because people will see Supreme Court and they go, okay, I remember we did a Chief Justice thing, and then I was voting for another Supreme. How many members of the Alabama Supreme Court?
Nine
members. So we got so each year, I mean, each cycle, it's a couple names coming up, right?
Yes. They stagger. It's like two or three every year.
Okay. So is there, and so place one, is place one a geographical thing, or is it just nine?
It's statewide. It's statewide, yes.
So you're campaigning for that, and at the same time, you know, you're going to have us asking you questions about your work here with the Senate Judiciary Committee, and of course, the prison committee here for the state. I mean, you've been doing that for, is it 5 years now?
No, I have been chairman of the Senate Judiciary for 9 years now. Actually, I'll start my 10th year coming up.
You know what I'm saying, on the prison task force.
Oh, yeah. I've been doing that since I was involved with the prison task force started back in 2013. So we've been doing that for a while, too.
Wow. And I want to get back into both of those subjects here in just a little bit. But you and I were talking during the news break about this. And I was relating to you what I'd finished doing in the first segment of the show, this story from down here in Baldwin County, where we have a sex offender that was off the radar. That they busted on Thursday, and there's a lot of extenuating parts of that story and felon in possession and all that kind of stuff. But how do we let somebody slip through the cracks like that?
It's a state issue. So I actually passed the last two laws cracking down on sex offenders. The District Attorneys Association had a package of bills. It's called SORNA, Sex Offender Registration Notification Act, where we track down where they live, making sure they register. The problem is when they leave state and go to another state, you've got to depend on both states communicating with each other.
So okay, yeah, and that's what I was talking about with Debbie Williams from News 5. I guess this person was in Georgia and committed crimes, served time. Then I guess the first time he came to Alabama, he was on the registry. Then he moves back to Georgia, and in that move, and this would have been in the night, it's not recent,
yeah.
But he got
comes
lost.
Off because he switches off, but he doesn't come back on when he comes back. Yeah, it's a notification process between Georgia and Alabama. Which means you got to get some sort of compact between the two states That is a real problem.
I mean, it seems like in the with the technological advances that are in our world, Senator, that there's some way we could use technology to help. I mean, I agree. You got to have one state help the other state and share information. We've talked about that in different issues, but it seems like through technology somehow you could track these people.
It's the nature of our federal structure. There's technology. There's no doubt the technology is there. The problem comes in is Georgia willing to update its technology to coordinate with Alabama, or is Alabama willing to do the same thing? They're communicating. But there's no question technology is there. It's a matter of getting the various states to work together on it as far as sharing information.
Well, I bet you if you polled folks in all the different states, they'd be on board for their states helping out the other.
Yeah, there's no question. But again, it's a matter of, it's not the Georgia legislature, the Alabama legislature. It's both state governments coming together saying, hey, let's share this. And there's some compacts already in place that are starting to do that. But this is a good example why you need more of it.
Just joining us, talking to State Senator Cam Ward, announcing this morning his run for Alabama Supreme Court. On this prison side, there we go. We can probably agree that whether the prisons are crowded or not, people like this probably need to be in that prison.
Oh, no, there's no question. What you want to do on the prison issue, crowded or not, two things. One, public safety is first and foremost, and you don't want to let a mass release. But also what you really want to do is make sure there's more bed space for people like this guy. That's the people you want to make sure stay in prison as long as we can keep them there. But if the federal courts or Department of Justice take us over and we lose that ability, these are the kind of people that we've got to be first and foremost making sure they're not on the streets.
Yeah, and people who have not followed this, obviously like you have and working on this, maybe don't realize how big the gorilla in the room is, that if we end up getting into federal receivership like California did, can you lay out how that, what it would look like?
Well, here's what I worry about. So, and this is not just a federal judge. This is also the Trump Justice Department has said, you better fix this. If you don't, what happens is they take the power away from your state legislatures. Your state policymakers lose all authority over it. And a receiver, usually a judge, sits around and dictates what you will and won't do. They can make you release a lot of people, which none of us want. They can make you spend a lot of money or even raise taxes, which none of us want. And that's what the fear is. So that's why you've got to solve this. And there's ways to get there, such as better mental health, better rehabilitation programs, and that kind of stuff. That's the kind of stuff you've got to work on so we don't let a lot of dangerous people out on the street.
Yeah, I'm looking at, I think it's something you had tweeted out over the weekend, or it was the reduction. We have had success. I mean, there's been reduction in the prison population in Alabama since this came to light, like you said, 6 years ago.
Yeah, no, you've had some. The problem you've got is you've just got to figure out, you know, who and why do I want them in there? And second, making sure that you're not letting a bunch of bad people. I passed the pardon and parole bill, that reform pardon and paroles, that said, look, if you're a murderer, rapist, child molester, human trafficker, then you got to serve at least 85% for your considered for parole. That was a bill the district attorneys and victims' rights advocates want. Because you want to make sure you got the right population in prison, and that's those people who are a threat to us, who could hurt us.
You know, before somebody even wastes their time with the text message, it may already have come in. I'll ask you the question that we get asked every time we're talking about this. Well, why don't you just release all the nonviolent drug offenders that are in Alabama prisons and then you open up space?
The latest report by the Alabama Sentencing Commission said 76% of everybody in our prison are either a Class A or Class B felon. And those are murderers, rapists, and child molesters. And none of us should want those people let out. What we should be about is, sure, if you need rehabilitation such as an addiction or mental health, we should try our best to provide those services. But we should also make sure if you're one of those top five most violent crimes, you shouldn't let those people out. That's not what the justice system's about. Justice should be fair, but it should also be tough.
Okay, so we got to raise the bridge and lower the water at the same time. So we're lowering the water on one end here with keeping people, diverting people that are nonviolent, not those top five, from getting in. How do we raise the bridge? How do we get more beds here?
Well, one, you'll have construction that'll lose some, but construction is not the answer by itself. Construction handles some of the conditions that the courts have ruled we better fix. But at the same time, you need to look in the objective standard. Here's a good example. So a guy goes in for, say it was robbery of some sort. Should they go to prison? Yes, they should under the code. But what happens when they get their GED and then finally get a licensed education program and that program says they can get a job in welding, carpentry, whatever, shouldn't that be considered? Shouldn't that be part of the conversation? You go, well, if that person's doing all this, they're going to get a job when they get out. Maybe that should be part of the consideration as to whether or not they get parole. 95% of everybody in a prison in the United States today eventually comes out. What do you want them to look like? You mm-hmm. want them to be rock bottom so that they commit the same crime again? They have no choice. They have no money, no income. Or would you like them to get a job, pay taxes, not be on the government welfare, and actually be a law-abiding citizen? That's what you want.
No, and I'm with you. And talking to folks in law enforcement that are on the front lines every day, I talk to some people that are, very, very strong on the victim's right side. They, too, will tell you still that it does no good to let somebody sit in prison and not get a skill set. Cam, can you hold on for a second?
Yeah, go right ahead.
All right. Coming right back from the news break, State Senator Cam Ward announcing today he's running for the top judicial branch side of the state with the Alabama Supreme Court. Go from the legislative to the judicial. We'll talk about that when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Continuing our conversation with State Senator Cam Ward, announcing today he's running for Place 1 Associate Justice with the Alabama Supreme Court. Senator, if people want to get more information on your campaign, where do they go?
Well, I will have a website up real soon, but right now you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, or even if you want to know about my career in the Senate, you can go to my website at camward.com, and that'll tell you about the things I've done since I've been in the Senate. So,
I know you're right.
And easy, too. My email address is cam@camward.com. I'm easy to find.
For sure. We'll put those links up. And one of the things that has made you a name that people down here know is this conversation we've been having for the last 6 years about prison reform in Alabama. And this is, people say, well, it's a cut and dry, black and white. This is not a simple subject. I've learned over the years, and there's a lot to this other than just building prisons. And you've pointed out in the past, too, that it's really not even the prisons that are the biggest cost for us as Alabamians. It's the staffing, right?
It's the staffing and health care. And here's the deal. First of all, public safety should be first and foremost. So what you want to avoid is a federal takeover that requires some sort of release of a bunch of nasty people in society. We don't want that. But if you don't comply with the federal court order, and Alabama has a long history of this, if you say, I'm just going to ignore the federal courts, I don't care what they say, they will force you into doing something that is not good for public safety, that requires us to spend a lot of money. And right now, they're saying we're in violation of the Eighth Amendment, so we got to get that resolved.
Okay, so timelines are important in this, and we talked about this over the years, and I thought we were at a push-come-to-shove moment earlier this year, and then there was a talk of a special coming up this fall, special session to address this, and then that was taken away. And so where does it stand now? I mean, what's next?
I think realistically, if you talk to the Department of Justice, again, we're talking about President Trump's appointees, if we go and do something, maybe like a special session within the regular in February, I think we can get these issues resolved. We've been talking about what to do, but I think we can get there.
Okay. But that is going to be – this is the tough parts of it, and this is what you all have to deal with up on Goat Hill, is let me just throw this at you. If I'm a House member or I'm a senator and there happens to be one of those present prisons in my district, I'm not real fired up about moving that out of my district. There's a lot of jobs associated with that.
Yeah, but you can't make the criminal justice system about jobs or money. The day that government is dictating your economic development or prosperity, that's a problem. Government should be out of the way. But you can't base your criminal justice system upon where the jobs are or putting money in the area. That sounds good in theory, but if your criminal justice becomes about economic development, you lost sight of what the system's supposed to look like.
No, I think in theory you're correct. I just have a feeling you'll have a fight on your hands.
Oh, no. No, I think make it on the construction side. And again, construction's about 10 to 15% of the problem, the solution. The idea there is the governor might do it without us, and she has that authority.
Yeah, explain to folks, we've mentioned this before on the show, but how would an executive branch solution, what would it look like?
So you have two solutions. You have one, the legislature passes a bill, you do a bond issue, then you hire a private company to build the prisons, and of course we run it. What she's looking at is the executive branch says, private company, build it, we'll lease it back from you and run it. The only difference is, do you lease or own it? her way of doing it, you don't issue a bond issue, you don't go into debt. That's why she wants to do it that way.
So
and it's quicker. The legislature's had three shots at it, and we seem to just can't get it done.
So the governor could say, okay, ABC Prison Building Company, you're going to build us these prisons, all right? And
they do a bid process and all that, right?
All right, and we sign on, we guarantee you we're going to, we have a lease for the next 50 years or whatever the term is. I don't know, but we would sign a guarantee that we're going to be the tenant, right?
Yeah, that's right. And then we would run and operate it just like any other prison.
But people say that's private prisons. It's not. It would be the ADOC people running it, correct?
Yes, that's correct. ADOC, it would not be private prisons, and I'm opposed to private prisons. It doesn't work. That's a bad system to run.
In complete agreement. So, because I heard somebody say, oh, it's a private prison. It's not. A private company builds a prison. ADOC staffs it. Then we get to the story about staffing, and we're talking about the money involved in this. And there have been some big stories over the last few years, the amount of overtime and things that were paid just to keep the prison system going.
Well, you cannot, first of all, you will never, ever do anything that says, oh, let's cut money. DOC will always consume money. Because we want public safety first and foremost, but you're going to have to pay those people more to work there, and you're going to have to hire more people to cover those jobs.
Well, that's one of the things about, and this is, I'm going through all the things I've learned over time, that just, because I said, hey, let's talk about Atmore here in our area, why don't we just add on to it, this and that, and you're saying that using new technology in a prison build actually lets there be fewer Department of Corrections folks to guard the same number of people?
Well, yeah. Yeah, here's why. So, for example, you would think there should be a lot of cameras in every single prison in our state. Well, that's not the case right now. Why? Because the buildings are so old, the wiring won't handle the electronic monitoring you should have. I mean, that's just a no-brainer. If I had more cameras, it'd be easier to keep up with who's doing what. Second, electronic locks. We still use manual key locks in a lot of our prisons. No one in the country does that. Almost everyone has an electronic type system. So, yeah, technology would help us keep not only prisons, but those on the outside of the prisons, safer.
Okay, and because I'm looking at people asking, once again, why not tent camps? Why not doing it that way?
Well, here's two reasons why. One, you got to spend a whole lot more money on tent than you do what we do. And Arizona spends a lot more than we do. Why? Because then you got to hire a whole lot more officers to monitor it. Two, the health care costs go up, which you're mandated to do by the federal court and the 8th Amendment of the Constitution. And then also, at the same time, it doesn't save you a lot of money because your primary cost in incarcerating somebody is the mandatory health care, which the feds require, and the mandatory, you got to watch them. And so the tents just don't save you a lot of money.
Now, you mentioned this a couple of times. This is part of this bigger. It's not just beds, like you said. It's not just keeping, redirecting people, keeping them out of prisons. But it is this healthcare thing. Is there a federal minimum that we're missing? What do you have? What does Alabama?
They have.
What do
they
we have to give?
The federal courts over the years have ruled this. You have a mandatory minimum amount of care that you have to provide. For example, our population is getting older, so guess what? You have more dialysis, kidney failure. You have to provide that. And now it sounds good and feels good to everybody to say, "I'm just not going to provide that to anybody. Who cares? They're in prison." Federal court care, and they'll rule against you and say this: if you don't do this, we're going to come in and do it for you, and we're going to make you pay for it. So that's why you have to be very careful. And another thing with the tents in Arizona, and Arizona lawmakers will tell you this, the amount of money they spent on lawsuits that they lost there is in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Oh, wow. We definitely don't have money for that.
Hey, Sean, yes. not to skip subjects here, but going back to something you asked me about earlier about the sex offender case that you're really concerned about.
Yeah.
Well, someone was just texting me about this in state government and said that we actually, under our sex offender laws, we're required to not only, the sex offenders required to register in both states when they come in and out, and that we should be telling each other when somebody's moving there. But it sounds like to me there's been a let down somewhere in state government not making that happen.
Yeah, and talking to Debbie Williams with News 5 earlier, I think in her discussions with folks in Baldwin County, that today, you know, if it happens, that system's in place, but there's this backlog. There were people that made these moves before the new changes were in, and I don't know how many of them there are. That's the scary thing.
I think when I passed this act, maybe 2014, it was 2014 or maybe even 2015. I think 2014 we passed it. Yeah, there's also a national sex offender registry.
But
so it should be, but yeah, but before the law was passed, that may be where the gap's coming in that needs to be addressed.
And if people didn't catch it earlier, you're saying that this legislation you passed in 2014 has, and it had an acronym that had tightened that up.
SORNA, they call it.
But at the core of this, it does go down to one state notifying the other state. I mean, yeah. Somebody in Alabama has to pick up the phone.
Your state law enforcement agency is supposed to notify the other state, and that other state is supposed to notify you. That's in the law, but it looks like here that was not followed.
I mean, so it would be, okay, sex offender leaves Alabama, going to Georgia. Alabama calls Georgia, say, hey, this person's coming, and then that person has to get to Georgia and check in. And yep. Georgia calls back and say, yeah, we got them. They're on our registry. What happens if that person never shows up in Georgia?
There's the gap. Because you're assuming I'm notifying Georgia, Georgia's notifying me. Let's say they go to Tennessee.
Yeah.
Unless you have some sort of tracking device or something, where they're going and who's going to track them, you wouldn't know that. It's a real problem. It's a real problem.
It's something that I would be frank with you, I was ignorant of and not even aware of until this story hit right here at home.
Unless you do this, I mean, kind of this legislative work all the time, you're depending on not only your government, but also another state's government to correspond with you. And as you know, oftentimes they don't do that with each other. Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, our neighboring states, maybe. But imagine if a sex offender moves from here to Colorado and then moves back here from Colorado or stops over in Wyoming. Now you got to assume that all 50 states are talking with each other, and that's not always the case.
Wow. Wow. Well, hopefully this will be, we'll get
there
some.
There is a national registry. I think the way to improve this is, I think the way to improve this is better dialogue and a more national-oriented discussion among law enforcement agencies. Because someone, you know, here's a good example. They commit another felony or something, and all of a sudden, they just run away, and they go 8 states away. There's no, you don't know where they're at. They may have gone back to Alabama, or they may have gone to Virginia. But you have no way of tracking that person. They're not going to show. You know that person's never going to show up and register in your state.
Right.
And if Georgia doesn't know or Alabama doesn't know, how would you know where they were going?
And like you said, if they move 3 different states in that process, I mean, there's so many chances for somebody to fall between the cracks, like we're looking
9
at here.
9 times out of 10, that offender just got in a car and drove off. And they drove until they stopped somewhere, and you know they're not telling anybody, and neither Georgia or Alabama would know it. So you got to figure out how, not only communication, but there are certain instances, too, like this, where it's going to be hard to track them.
Y'all put that on your stack for session this year.
Yes, sir.
Once again, State Senator Cam Ward joining us announcement today. Tell folks, once again, the office you're running for and why they should vote for you.
Alabama Supreme Court Justice, Place 1. And again, simple judicial philosophy. I think the legislature should write the law, but I think the court should interpret it, and it shouldn't be the other way around. I've always felt that way, and I feel like I can add a lot to the work the Supreme Court does in that area.
As always, I appreciate our conversations, and come join us again. Maybe you're out in the state campaigning statewide. You come by and see us in person.
Well, we'll talk again for the next session as well. But thank you for having me on, Sean.
Thank you. State Senator Cam Ward joining us right here on Midday Mobile. Grab some of your calls and texts when we get back at 343-0106. Plus, Todd Stacey joins us coming up after 1 o'clock.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:51, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, Monday style. And by the way, if you've seen the Canon, saw it last week. Canon there at the Loop is painted pink for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and they've got their Bras Across the Causeway event coming up this Saturday. We'll talk more about that. And I think they said, I didn't see it the other day, they said as of this morning, there are bras hanging on the cannon. It may be distracting. I would say might be distracting to drivers. Oh, by the way, though, on this month, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, a quick reminder and a ask of you a favor here. I'm one of the American Cancer Society's Real Men Wear Pink participants. There's a group of us goofy looking guys. You'll see us in pink ties and lapel pins and shirts and all that as we're out this month as ambassadors for the American Cancer Society. And bringing attention to Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I'm also at the same time raising money for breast cancer research. As I've told you in the past, this is something very close to me. And cancer's been my mother, 20 year since she had breast cancer, beat breast cancer 20 years ago. And I'm going to do everything I can to give back. And this is one of the things I do to give back. And I sure appreciate the donations that have come in so far. If you go to the Facebook page for the radio station, so facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5, or the Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5. We got links there. Or if you email me, Sean, S-E-A-N, at FMTalk1065.com, I'll send you the link as well. You can go through Secure Site, American Cancer Society, and make a donation. We're raising money this month for breast cancer research. So please help me help out the American Cancer Society. Thank you very, very much. It means a lot to me. And the people that donated, even over the weekend, y'all are awesome. Thank you. Really is. I mean, I'm seriously moved by it when you do that. Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, a couple things. That story that we're running with WKRG has about the people egging the motorcyclist. You saw this, right? There, the egging of the motorcyclist. Maybe it's just as I don't know if it turns out to be punk kids. I'm thinking it just, to me, it seems like a punk kid thing. I don't know, but it's throwing eggs at somebody on a motorcycle, first of all, I mean, could lead to, obviously, a wreck and injuries, if not something worse. But are they egging? I mean, what kind of bikers are they egging? And nothing specific against this biker that got egged. But, like, this weekend, we're heading back yesterday from Birmingham, and there are a lot of motorcycles on the road coming down 65 southbound. There were lots of... I'm going to get myself in such trouble. But the grandpas of anarchy were on the road yesterday, and that's one thing. Good for you. I mean, we all have our hobbies. Get out, ride the bikes. Cool stuff. not the sons. It's the grandpas of anarchy that were riding down the road. But those kind of folks, you may get away with. But punk kids, let me say, if there's going to be the wrong person on a motorcycle, on a Harley, you're going to throw an egg at, and we're going to have another news story after that about what happens to you. Just going to put it that way. All right. Oh, and by the way, too, this is good. This is a good exercise in reason and making sure you are consistent. Somebody challenged me early on Twitter when I put up the story and started talking about this dirtbag they arrested over in Foley. Okay? This guy, and I guess we'll use his name in this case because, you know, this is somebody that you want to make sure that if there's more information about this guy, that it gets into law enforcement. They arrested this guy in Foley. This was Thursday. So it happened Thursday, just now making the news here. So law enforcement in Baldwin County arrests this I have the story just moved off my screen. There it is. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Because I'll use his name because people need to know. Bobby Ricky Bible. A guy arrested at RV Park in Baldwin County. And I was lamenting this story. And somebody said, Debbie Williams talked about the investigators and deputies found firearms there, and the guy's a felon, so you have felon in possession. Also, they mentioned that there were juveniles that were on again, off again, or either living in the trailer or coming by this camper or whatever. Those were of interest, but they also mentioned here that deputies found a child sex doll in this RV. Okay. I've said something about it, and somebody on Twitter challenged me to why that would be a crime. And good point. Well, did. And I said, actually, what was upsetting me is we had a system like I just talked about with State Senator Cam Ward, where somebody who would be on a sex offender list would slip, one of the states, two of the states, some of the states slip up, and somebody like this gets off the radar. That's what bothers me. Now, am I troubled by the fact of these dolls out there that are, and somebody's asking what we mean. I don't get to, it's a sex doll that's a child. And that's probably as far as I'm going to explain it. And this guy had it. And somebody challenged me on Twitter, as they should, maybe, for, you know, let's make sure I'm not a hypocrite in my libertarianism. They said, you know, who's being harmed? I can get into theories about that, but you're right. I mean, this is, well, I find it abhorrent, but it's not the doll that worries me as much as the fact that this guy was off the radar. Right? Now, the thing that will be talked about, a whole bunch of these dolls, and Dalton and I were talking about the robots that... grown-up fun-time robots that exist out there, and you, Lord knows, you Google them, you'll see all kinds of... But at that point in the story, it came up, what about them making children version of these? And it's shocking, and it's extremely bothersome to folks. But right now, there's no law against that. The guy wouldn't be arrested, I don't think, for having that. I think what he was arrested for and what I was talking about is the fact that here's somebody who could be living in your neighborhood, living right next door to you and your children, and you go do the thing where you go online, like I think we all parents have done, and look around our home and see who's in that area, and it wouldn't show up. So that's the thing that bothered me. But yeah, thank you. I mean, somebody who wanted to make sure that I wasn't saying that this was a crime, that it's not. It could be abhorrent to me, but not a crime. All right, so believe me, we'll probably hear way more about this story in the next couple days. You can check out the link. I'll put it up on the Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5. All right, lots to talk about with our buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. We'll talk about the announcement you just heard about with State Senator Cam Ward. Also, Alabama Democrats approve new bylaws amid an internal feud. The internal feud in the Alabama Democratic Party is like something for Days of Our Lives. We'll get into that with Todd coming up.